Sounds to me like you're daunted. Say it again like you're undaunted.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. Whenever you're listening to this, whenever you may be watching this, this is the Often Daunted Podcast, and I am your host, Burke White. The Hoosiers moved to 17-8 on the season, 8-6 in conference, after they are able to win five of their last six. And they just are rolling at the right time. I'm excited to talk about it, and that's what we got on today's show. Part of the College Huddle Network here on the Often Daunted Podcast. That is a network of college basketball and college football podcasts spanning coast to coast. And as we do on each episode, I will be starting off with some recaps. This episode, we will be recapping both the Wisconsin game and the Oregon game. Following that, we'll have the Indiana news for you, everything going on with the program and just, other Indiana University athletics news for you. After that, it's going to be the conference and the national news, followed by the winners and the losers for the week, or as we call it on this show, the flaunted and the daunted. After that, I'll have Burke's Big Five. That is a entirely subjective list of my own opinion. This week, Burke's Big Five is the five players I'd want bediacoed into our program. Following that, we will get into previewing our matchup with Illinois. And then right before getting you out of here, we'll do it as we usually do and get you on to a Hoosier history hit. This Hoosier history hit discussing our original school colors. Thanks to all the old listeners. Thanks to all the new listeners. If you just found your way here, congrats. I mean, you found the bottom of the well of Indiana basketball content out there. And I can't appreciate you enough for just having a thirst for the program like this. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoy the show. All right. I wanted to start this episode just with a reflection of my own on Indiana football. You know, so like I stepped away from the podcast for probably a month's time or so. Just because following the Big Ten championship game that me and my buddies were fortunate enough to make it to Indy for, I wanted to take a step back. I wanted to fully just enjoy what quite literally was a once in a lifetime. You can't even call it that. What quite literally was a once in college football history occurrence in Indiana's historic run to the national championship. Of course, I didn't know that I was going to be on hiatus this long. I didn't know Indiana for sure was going to go all the way to the national championship. But after sitting down at that Big Ten championship game in Lucas Oil, after soaking up the environment, after just enjoying the hell out of the Indiana football Hoosiers, I mean, first look at the postseason, I told myself I just wanted to fully enjoy this. I wanted to consume all the Indiana football podcast content that I could. I just wanted to enjoy the ride for all it had to give me. And boy, did I. Just talking, like they made this hiatus as long as it possibly could with the way they did with the way they pushed it all the way to the national championship and won. And just thinking about everything that had to break our way for that to happen. Like Sig is such a miraculous hire in the history of Indiana football. I mean, just in the history of football, if you think about it. He had to be brash out of the gate. And he had to be brash out of the gate. And if you're honest with yourself, you took everything with a grain of salt initially. And you know what? How foolish was that? This guy, like, we had to take it with a grain of salt because why shouldn't we? We've only ever known pain at football. We've known new hires. We've known all that. But this guy came in. He said Purdue sucks. And we said, yeah, you know what? Yeah, they do suck. And then he said Ohio State and Michigan suck too. Just saying, you know what? We are not going to settle with being better than the bottom. We are striving for perfection, and he did it in a span of 2 years. What in the entire lifetime experience of, you can't even say lifetime experience, in the entire university's lifetime of experience watching Indiana football, this was inconceivable. And Kurt Cignetti was able to get it done. He was able to build a program worth a damn, not just worth a damn, worth it all. Like, and it's just truly, it was an awesome time to sitting back, unplugging myself from the podcast and just enjoying the ride that was Indiana football's run, nay, tear through the college football playoffs this season. Can't thank them enough for the fun that was had along the way. And you know what? Here's looking forward to the next few runs we got coming our way. So yeah, without further ado, I'm pumped to be back. Let's just, let's get into the recaps. Indiana has a huge charge call break their way, and again holds off blowing another big early lead as the Hoosiers beat the Badgers 78-77 in Bloomington last Saturday. Indiana was up as many as 14 points in this game before Wisconsin started its comeback, and boy, did it start to look like another late-game collapse following a Hoosiers just large lead. I mean, like I said, I stepped away from the podcast. I didn't step away from Indiana basketball. I'm watching every game. You know I am. We've seen this become a customary, like, almost characteristic of this team, their ability to blow these leads, to let the team back into games that, you know, you just prayed that they would keep their foot on the pedal, keep playing their game. But too many times, like before this Wisconsin game, we saw Indiana take their foot off the gas in order to, I mean, honestly, burn clock. And it's like, that's not what got us the lead in the first place. So we weren't burning clock to gain that lead. Just keep playing your game. And that's all we wanted from them. But it honestly started taking form. Like, this might be just another case of that classic, all too familiar scene for the season. But unfortunately for Wisconsin, Indiana found a way. Indiana found a way. Holding Wisconsin to 6-for-20 from deep in the first half was absolutely major in our chances for this outcome, especially after what was just huge answers from Wisconsin. I'm looking at, I was watching the Wisconsin and Illinois game on Tuesday night, and they were doing the same thing. Like, every single time Illinois was pressing, like getting a little further of a lead, Wisconsin had a bucket to answer that, to respond with. And that team just consistently looks to take threes. And our ability to damage them from deep was the largest, our ability to limit their damage from deep was the largest factor playing into Indiana's big lead at the half. In that first half, they were held to 6-for-20. Yeah, like I said, 6-for-20, 30%. A team that takes as many shots as that, like 20 and a half, holding them to six, you're going to have a good chance in that half. We've seen Indiana give up these leads, and it's just that first half was so strong. And it's just visible for anyone who has watched this team game to game this season. When Indiana departs from their up-tempo nature in favor of just burning clock, the offense can come to a standstill. We just cannot do this in the games to come. We got by the skin of our teeth in this one, but you really hope that Indiana can address the shortcoming that is our ability to burn out clock. We can't do it. We got to just keep pushing tempo and playing the game that got them the lead in the first place. Yeah, a large part for that dwindling lead can be credited to just almost too much of an effort being taken up by our guys on the defensive end. Again, effort fixes a lot, but there was just a large majority of just overhelping on the part of Indiana's defenders that was just leaving shooters wide open for the Badgers in the second half. And Bucky was absolutely taking full advantage of it to chip away at that Indiana lead. Offensively, while slow at times, it was refreshing to see Indiana find a way to win despite being held to such a low percentage from three. Indiana in the first half was held to 14 for 13 from three, even worse in the second half, 1 for 7, 5 for 22 on the night. That is a 22.7% from deep. And it's like, if you told me heading into the game 22.7%, I would have thought we got beat by 25 points. Just because that is what this team has taught me is that the three is going to be such an identifying factor for this squad. And it was just awesome to see them be able to find other ways to get the job done, to stay competitive, to stay in just far enough in that lead up until the Wisconsin took it. And then, being able to contend while shooting that poorly from deep shows that this Indiana team has grown together. They know there's other ways they can do it. They've explored the options. That's a credit to the coaching that we've seen. Indiana was able to score 44 points in the paint here. This was good for the second, or this was good for the most allowed by a Wisconsin opponent on the season to date. And I mean, a large reasoning for those 44 points was just officials letting these guys play. Indiana was really putting in the effort down low on and on the interior, and it was really miraculous what they were able to get from the roster on the inside. That 44 points in the paint was good for 73% of Indiana's points. 73% of Indiana's points were either in the paint or at the line. And it's just really understanding. It's a credit to the coaching, because that is just really understanding the type of day they were in and just playing the game that was needed to contend with this Wisconsin team, scoring 29 of their 36 second half points inside or at the line as well. Defensively, IU performed much stronger in the first half than the second, as you saw Wisconsin make a much more conscious effort to get the ball in the hands of Blackwell in that second half. Once they saw how effectively he was attacking the paint from the outside and just how their offense was really opening up and thriving off of his ability to get inside in the interior, the game looked to become a lot easier for the Badgers. That being said, like, being able to keep the second chance points at a stalemate was absolutely huge for the Hoosiers. Staying even with Wisconsin at 37 rebounds for both sides was massive when considering just how close this game was. This literal victory trumps the moral victories all day. Literal victory trumps moral victories all day. But that being said, the Hoosiers should be able to take some pride in stepping up to the occasion and going toe-to-toe with the Wisconsin Badgers on the glass. Tied 37 rebounds apiece, keeping the second chance points at a stalemate as well. It's being able to do that can alleviate some of the odds not being in our favor with the 22.7% from deep. As far as officiating goes, I mean, officiating was the buzzword following that game for sure. I will never apologize for anything that leads to a Hoosiers win. I just won't. They called it. Connor put him in a position to call the charge. And, I mean, Nick Boyd, you saw it. That dude was playing with a just almost unhinged level of emotion. And Connor took advantage of it. Connor played him, but he also played himself in that way. Like, you want to play with that much emotion, you might shove a guy when he's trying to draw a charge. And as far as Lamar's foul went, he stepped on him. Whether he saw it or not, I'm going to tell myself retroactively, he did. So let's call it that. I will never apologize for anything that leads to a Hoosier victory. Big performances in this game. None bigger than Sam Alexis. 19 points on 9 for 10 from the floor. 7 rebounds and a critical 5 blocks for Sam Alexis, who had his premier game as an Indiana Hoosier Saturday. His ball control in the post was just such a welcome sight to see. Like, he boxed out well. He had the offense's just shot timing locked down as he was able to max out his blocking potential. Being able to get 5 blocks for Sam Alexis is absolutely huge. And especially considering the size that he lacks compared to a lot of these guys. His ball control in the post was a sight for sore eyes. It was something to see. And at 6'9", you just, to have that many blocks, 5 on the interior, you know he had to have just a great feel for the game in those moments. That is all timing. That is all game feel. And he was feeling it. Despite being off his, almost come to be expected level of efficiency, Lamar Wilkerson still puts in a total of 25 points. That's all even while going 1 for 8 from deep. We heard in the offseason, like, we were getting an absolute lights-out shooter, the best shooter in the transfer portal. And I think we got the best shooter. I think we did get the best shooter in the transfer portal. But what we didn't know we were getting was just such a polished offensive player. He can do it all. He can do it in so many ways, so many more ways than we all had expected at the dawn of the season. And he just continues to show the variety in ways he can impact the bottom line of production for this team. It's incredible. And putting on full display that he is not just a 3-point shooter. I mean, going 1 for 8. Like, he is not just a 3-point shooter. Connor Enright, just such an important piece to this game, such an important piece to this team. He plays his role perfectly in this Wisconsin game, actually taking more shots than we're accustomed to seeing, with him going 5 for 11 from the floor on the game. But his ability to just preside over the offense was on full display. He was able to tally 6 assists while guarded by a very staunch, a very strong Wisconsin backcourt. And all of that while just making sure ball protection, possession protection was a priority and not committing a turnover. In this game, you got to give credit to Assembly Hall. Assembly Hall, this is a Wisconsin team that took down 2 top 10 Big Ten opponents on their floor while visiting. First, it was Michigan, and then it was Illinois in the game that they just played Tuesday following our matchup. This Wisconsin team, they love to tout themselves as the villains. You saw them kind of walk in with that swagger into Assembly Hall. Indiana being able to protect the hall, to find a way to scratch out, to grit out, to claw out a victory here, it can't go understated just how important Assembly Hall was in this one. Credit to each and every one of you that was in attendance. Thank you so much. Showalter Fish of the Game, giving it out to the best player for this one. It has to go to Sam Alexis. It absolutely has to go to Sam Alexis. Like I said, 19 points, totally efficient, 9 for 10 from the floor. making the one free throw he took while being able to grab 7 rebounds, 5 blocks. He was a man on fire, doing a little bit of everything and just taking care of everything on the defensive end. Sam Alexis, credit to you, man. What he's been able to display in these last 2 games is nothing short of a revelation that we desperately needed. Showalter Fish of the game, Sam Alexis. All right, Indiana takes down Wisconsin 78-77. And with that, let's head into the Oregon recap. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. And after taking a decent lead into the half, the Hoosiers shot 82%, led by a generational performance in the hall by Lamar Wilkerson, as Indiana takes a big 92-74 win over the Oregon Ducks. Visiting, of course, from across the country. I think we were the second game for him. But still, just an incredible outing by the Hoosiers. Incredible display of offense. Offensively, Indiana was converting at just an incredible clip. Shot 41% from deep. That's 11 for 27 on the day. It was just much like that 41%, so much better than the game prior. You know, you think if with the amount of shots that we take from long range, if we're converting on 40%, we have a good chance in most of the games we're going to play. And then, you know, once Lamar got his scoring going, Indiana just was playing at a level on that end of the floor that Oregon just could not keep up with. They had no counter for everything Indiana was able to do in their constant motion, and just they had no answers for what Indiana was showing them. Indiana was able to convert on 60% of the shots they took from the floor, showing Oregon the second most efficient night in opposition has had against the Ducks all season long. Ball movement, spacing, cutting, shot making, and getting to the line, the Hoosiers were just absolutely dialed in. You can usually point to the second chance points as a key factor in victory, one way or the other. That is the case for most of the games, I feel. But not here. You really can't. Oregon with 14 second chance points. IU with 4. The discrepancy there, largely just due to Indiana shooting the hell out of the ball and just not giving opportunities for themselves to grab offensive boards. Yeah, we're converting on the first one. Second chance points weren't coming by often. Defensively, as a team, the team did well to mitigate the damage the Ducks front court was going to be able to do, especially Sam Alexis being able to limit Nate Biddle to a less than efficient night from the floor, like a less than, you know, typical Biddle performance. Energy over inches all day in the case of Sam Alexis. And when this team is defending with the communication and energy, they are just able to do a hell of a whole lot to make up for what is literally like their shortcoming. Sure, Nate Biddle got to the line 13 times, but the defensive tenacity was able to hold him to 3 for 14 from the floor. I mean, just he's returning from injury. He's playing himself back into health. And that, even with that said, a 3 for 14 night for Nate Biddle is that's an outlier. And credit to the Hoosier defense for making that happen. Seemed like DeVries, like he made it a point of emphasis for the front court. He made it a point of emphasis that the Oregon front court wasn't going to beat us with the effort and the attention that the interior was getting. If Oregon was going to win it, it was going to be up to the guards. And Oregon was just too thin there to keep up, as you know, Jackson's Shellstad was out of the game. Without Shellstad, if you can hold Biddle to an ineffective night from the floor, as we did again, 3 for 14, things will go good for you just more often than they don't with the way that the that Dana Altman has this Oregon squad currently constructed. Without scoring in the first 13 minutes of the game, Wilkerson is still able to tally a total of 41 points as he just caught fire and was ablaze until the final buzzer. Lamar Wilkerson just, he has the capability to become, in my mind, like some hyperbole, I guess, but he has the ability to become a March Madness legend. He's got the type of game that when he's on, this team can compete. This team can beat absolutely anyone. He ends his night with one of the greatest offensive displays that Assembly Hall has ever seen. 41 points on 13 for 20 shooting, including six makes from behind the arc, making this his fourth straight game with at least 20 points. His 41 points was good for the second most in his Indiana Hoosier career. Second to, of course, that Penn State game where he scored 44 points. And I'm just interested to see how this affects the looks we get moving forward. Like, Lamar Wilkerson is no longer our secret. He's performed at such a high level consistently enough that his reputation has grown in tow with that. And I'm sure teams will have him just even more circled, even more game planned than they already have. Hopefully opening up opportunities for a lot of our other guys. But even with that, this guy has shown me enough. I don't know if they can stop him when he's on. You can't stop him when he's on. He's going to find a way to get a bucket. That baseline midi was absolutely outrageous. I don't know how he makes that, but he's making it. Lamar Wilkerson, just such a godsend that we were able to get him for this, his lone year in Indiana. Sam Alexis from the floor, just absolutely perfect. 16 points on 8 for 8 shooting, 5 boards, 2 assists. Sam making up for any inadequacies our front court may have, you know, as just the way this roster is built. His energy, his tenacity, he's strong. 6'9", he is throwing down, he throws his weight around in a manner that just, it feels like he's playing bigger than he is. He's really been making strides here in the extent at which he can be trusted. Game in and game out, Sam is finding ways to earn more and more trust from, what does our trust mean? We're just the fan base, but it has to be from the team as well. He's becoming a really reliable source of production, and more importantly, a really reliable source of energy when this team may need it from time to time. Tucker in this game was just finding his spots within the flow of the offense while also letting Lamar do his thing. I think in the post-game press conference, he said, when Lamar's on like that, you just got to get out of his way and let him cook. In this game, Tucker, even though he let Lamar do his thing, let Lamar cook, and of course he did. Lamar had 41 points. You're going to let that man cook. Chef Lamar's going to be whipping up whatever he wants that day. Even so, Tucker was able to find his role, able to find his flow in the offense, going 5 for 10 from the floor while converting on all 3 of his attempts at the line. He ends his night with 15 points. But more impressively, like I said, just working within the flow of the offense, nothing can tell you that he was doing that more than the 7 assists he had on the night. In this game, it was another quiet showing after the hot start of starts that Nick Dorn had shown us, prior to LA and then their trip at LA. Nick Dorn kept coming up short from deep in the first, but he caught some residual fire there once Lamar started taking over to start the second half, and he was able to tally up a respectable night of production. Both of his makes from the floor coming from deep, as well as getting to the line and making the most of it, going 5 for 5 from the line. Again, another key piece of the squad in this game, Connor Enright, he's just a dog. Connor is an absolute dog. And Connor once again showed up and put on a great display at the point guard position. Both ends of the floor, he's been an absolute workhorse and just a stabilizing factor. Whether it's his effort and IQ on the defensive end or his ability to distribute and make just enough big shots to keep opposing defenses honest, like making sure you have to guard him. He doesn't take a lot of shots, but he's made some big shots for us here in this season. And so, like, you can't just take your guy off him. He must be guarded, and his ability to still preside over the offense when that is the case, it's been a godsend for this team. We got shooters. We don't need a pure shooter at point guard. We need a Connor Enright right now. And in this game, 8 assists, 1 turnover, efficiency, 6 rebounds from the point guard position, tenacity, and forcing the official to make a call in Assembly Hall in the heat of the moment at the end. That's intelligence. Efficiency, tenacity, intelligence, Connor Enright. You know, wins in this conference, they're hard to come by. They are hard to get. And you lay a foundation of success by winning the ones you should. And that's exactly what happened here in the Indiana and Oregon game. I mean, you were supposed to win this. I think the line was originally like 12, 11 points. But the manner in which Indiana was able to keep its foot on the gas the whole 40 minutes and just, I mean, take it to Oregon, 92-74, something to applaud, something to be proud of in just the direction that this program seems to be moving. Your Showalter fish of the game for this, I mean, there's no question. It's Lamar Wilkerson. It's Chef Lamar, okay? He was on fire. He was incredible. Again, 41 points, 13 for 20, 9 for 11 from the free throw line. Incredible game. This guy makes history in Assembly Hall, and it's just a shame that we only get this 1 year with him. Should have been more, man. Should have been more. Darren DeVries, like, last just thoughts regarding both of these games. The Darren DeVries, the proof of concept can be seen. This is the foundation of good things to come. If whatever the case, I mean, I feel so much better with where we are right now. February 11th at the time of this recording, February 11th, than we have in the seasons prior when you got to say we had more quote unquote talent on those rosters. The proof of concept is working. When Darren DeVries is able to fill out his concepts, his schemes, his game plan with talent, it's going to be a successful program we have going here in Bloomington. This is the foundation of good things to come, I promise you. So, yeah, with that, those recaps in the books, let's get on to the Indiana news. Starting off the Indiana news with some successful recruiting news for you. Since our last time we're recording, welcome aboard Trevor Manhertz. The 6'8 four-star forward Trevor Manhertz has announced his decision probably about 3 weeks ago. Following it being dialed into Indiana, Louisville, or Duke, he has announced his decision to reclassify to the class of 2026, and he will be joining the Indiana Hoosiers for next season. Trevor Manhertz now joins Prince Moody Alexander and Vaughn Carvalho to help the Hoosiers climb the ladder, and now has them sitting at the number 14 spot in 24/7 Sports recruiting class rankings for next season's freshmen. And I mean, he's signing on for what hopefully the proof of concept that he's seeing right now in this Indiana team. I mean, I'm sure there might be some financial incentive, but everyone was worried about the recruiting there for a bit. This class is coming together. And like, no, Vaughn Carvalho, that dude can absolutely jump out of the gym. Some of his highlights are ridiculous. I'm such a sucker for highlights like that. Really excited for his play. And Vaughn, and Prince Moody Alexander. Like, I need to go follow him if you haven't. Like, this kid is already such an ambassador for Indiana University, and he hasn't even stepped foot on campus for a class yet. You look at his timeline on X or wherever, and it's all Indiana. He is just repping the cream and crimson so hard, and he hasn't even gotten into a practice yet. He is going to be an awesome ambassador for this university, and I can't wait to welcome all three of these guys in next season. Indiana has announced that it will build a statue immortalizing Bobby Knight inside of Assembly Hall. I believe it is on the north entrance of Assembly Hall, and it's just good to see. You know, some people out there, they hate the manner in which Bobby decided to end his time here, where the choking thing, not great. But Bobby Knight, he's our history, man. He is the history of this program. He deserves a statue in Assembly Hall, and he's getting it. Great to see, in my opinion. February 19th, Indiana's own. This isn't really Indiana University news, just more Indiana as a state. Indiana's own Nick Gepper from Lawrenceburg, Indiana, right there on the border of like Ohio and close in the Cincinnati area. Nick Gepper from Lawrenceburg, Indiana, will be taking on the world in the men's freestyle ski halfpipe event. He is the only Indiana native representing America at the games this winter. And some love for some NIL deals or some deals for our Bulldog, our point guard, Connor Enright. Connor Enright announced Tuesday that he is partnering with DonateLifeIndiana.org to bring attention to be an organ donor. Say yes to organ donation. Say yes. Been saying yes since I was 16 and never won't. So, go ahead and support his cause. Tell him Connor sent you. Hopefully we get some more deals like this. Also, Connor, he announced just Wednesday, he announced his J-Lab audio deal by hooking up the guys with new custom Indiana headphones in the locker room that I just desperately want now. You see these headphones, just nice white headphones with the cream and crimson foam on the inside. And it's a white headphone, Indiana script in crimson on the outside, both sides. Really, really sweet headphones. Congrats to Connor, making some money here while he's in Bloomington. You love to see it. Go support our guys. Again, tell J-Lab Audio Connor sent you. Indiana's latest for the KenPom and the net rankings. Right now, Indiana sits at 35th overall in KenPom with the 32nd offense and the 50th defense. And they currently sit at 31st in the net. I believe they were like 33 before Wisconsin was able to take down Illinois in Champaign Tuesday. They only have one quad 2, 3, or 4 loss, and that is the quad 2 loss at Minnesota. I mean, an at quad 2 loss is so much better than a home quad 2 loss. So right now, Indiana has kept the resume clean, cleaner than we've seen in years. So awesome to see. Bracketology, the latest in bracketology. Lenardi has Indiana as a 9 seed matching up with 8 seed Villanova. USA Today has us as a 10 seed facing off with 7 seed Villanova. CBS has us as the Midwest 9 seed taking on 8 seed Utah State. And Delphi's latest has the number 9 seed Indiana taking on the 8 seed SMU in the South. Just Wednesday, it was announced that a record number of Hoosiers will be attending, or at the least have been invited. Can't imagine Fernando will attend. He'll probably be around there taking meetings. But a record number 9 Indiana Hoosiers have been invited to the NFL combine. Those include Fernando Mendoza, Roman Hemby, Omar Cooper Jr., Elijah Surratt, Riley Nowakowski, Pat Coogan, Aiden Fisher, D'Angelo Pons, and Luis Moore. And yeah, with all that in the books, let's get on to some conference and national news for you. Just announced for the Big Ten Players of the Week. Co-player of the week was Lamar Wilkerson. He was able to average 29 points, 4 rebounds, 2.5 assists, and 2 steals as Indiana split a pair of games. Opened the week with 33 points, 4 rebounds, and 3 steals in an 81-75 loss at USC. Following that, he had posted 25 points, including a pair of free throws, to send the game into overtime and all 6 of Indiana points in the OT as Indiana beat Wisconsin 78-77. This was his second player of the week honor, and I have to say, I have a feeling he might be winning next week's because this did not include his 41%, his 41-point performance against the Ducks. So, I mean, just awesome to see him racking up some of these honors. It's going to be fun to see where he falls at the end of the year. But, man, he is putting together a special season. A special season full of special performances. The other Big Ten player of the week, co-Big Ten player of the week, was Bennett Sturts from Iowa, who averaged 29 points, 3.5 assists, and 1.5 rebounds, being able to shoot 60.6% from the field in a 2-game span. And, he had scored a career-high 36 points in Iowa's 76-70 win over Northwestern. This last week's freshman of the week was Elijah Arenas. And yeah, it was against Indiana. That game kind of awoke Elijah. He recorded 26.5 points over the 2 games that the Trojans were able to win last week, paired with a career high 29 points and 6 rebounds as they were able to beat us. Congrats to him being able to get his first Freshman of the Week honor there. In the girls' news, Big Ten co-player of the week was Shay Chesky, Indiana senior guard. Put up 31 points while shooting 63.2% with 9 rebounds and a season-high 5 steals at Wisconsin. And then she led the Hoosiers with 29 points and 12 rebounds against Purdue for her second double-double of the season. Congrats to Shay. Keep it going, girls. With this being the first episode since all schools in our country, since all schools in the conference finished up every part of their non-conference schedules, I guess Michigan still just, it's so weird they have that outlier game with Duke. Other than that game, I just wanted to say kudos to the conference as a whole. The Big Ten ended up with the second best win percentage amongst conferences, with the Big 12 having the first at 0.806 win percentage, and the Big Ten had a 0.801. Talking about just where the Big Ten stacks up currently, the Big Ten currently ranks second in today's KenPom conference rankings. That is just behind the SEC, with 13 of the Big Ten's 18 teams ranked in the top 75 of KenPom as of Monday's games. And this includes 6 of the top 25 and 12 in the top 50. The Big Ten's had a really great showing, and as long as we can just hold strong and just continue to find a way to chip away to get some of these wins, win the ones you should, find a way to grab one or two of the ones you aren't expected to. Indiana should be firmly in the tournament just based on how well the Big Ten has been performing as a whole this season. On Tuesday, the Big Ten Conference Student Athlete Issues Commission sent a letter to NCAA President Charlie Baker urging the NCAA to continue pushing for limitations or the outright elimination of proposition betting involving individual student athletes competing in college athletics. The letter from the Big Ten Conference outlines, well, the Big Ten Conference SAIC outlines the growing concerns around the rise of individual performance prop wagering in college sports, including increased harassment student athletes experience because of wagers on individual performance proposition wagers, negative impact of the individual performance proposition betting has on student athletes' mental health, and accusations of impropriety, even when unfounded, damage the student athlete experience. And lastly, potentially jeopardizing the integrity of athletic competition. The letter had stated, while we understand that sports betting is becoming increasingly more common across the country and allows for states to generate increased tax revenue, prop betting represents unique risks at the college level. We believe protecting student athletes must be a priority. Limiting or eliminating prop betting on college athletics would be a meaningful step forward, reducing harassment, protecting mental well-being, and preserving the integrity of college competition. The official statement and reply from Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti was, the Big Ten Conference is proud to support our student athletes in calling for the restriction or elimination of individual proposition wagers on college athletics. The Big Ten Conference appreciates the NCAA's efforts to eliminate these wagers and will continue to assist student athletes as they deal with the challenges that result from proposition bets in college sports. And I am honestly for this. Like, it just seems like it's just so much easier to corrupt the college game with these prop sports, with these prop bets, than it would be like a professional league. Those guys are looking to stick around at the next level. They're not, you know, shaving a few assists. They're not trying to stay right under target points for a night. Like, there's just so much that can go wrong with prop sport betting and at the college level that I am in full support of them banning that. That seems like a no-brainer. You know, it's already crazy that it's gotten to an extent where, I mean, all of you who loves betting on college sports, go knock yourself out. I don't go down that lane because I know the type of personality I have, and I'm a natural born loser. So, I try to just stay out of that altogether. But the way in which the wrong people could get in the ears of the wrong kids, and you know, really affect the outcomes of these games, seems like such a much more real possibility with these proposition bets than like a total, you know, win or loss for your program, your team, that in on a given night. And lastly, for the conference in national news, the AP reported on Monday, out of Tuscaloosa, an Alabama circuit judge on Monday denied Alabama basketball player Charles Bediako's motion for a preliminary injunction, ending the 7-foot center's collegiate eligibility and his season with the Crimson Tide. County Circuit Court Judge Daniel Pruitt cited that Bediako failed to demonstrate that he is entitled to the injunctive relief that he seeks, according to court documents. So that brings to an end the Charles Bediako saga. Just absolutely insane that he was able to, just after years in the NBA system, going from G League to NBA, just jumping around, he was able to come back to college. And shame on Nate Oates for introducing that and just having to have somebody say no. Like, the worst they can say is no, but like, why even make them, man? Why are you trying to do that to the game we all love? Ridiculous. So glad to see that that's over. All right, on to the flaunted and the daunted. This This is the Flaunted and the Daunted, the winners and losers for the week. I guess a little longer in the case of this one because it's been a while since we recorded, but let's start it as we have been so fortunate to start it over the course of this whole season. For the last time of the season, we are going to start with Kurt Cignetti and the Indiana Football Hoosiers. Again, making history, giving us all memories we will never forget. And you know what? As fun as that first one was, it really makes you want a second. Here's to whatever the future of Indiana football holds. Here's to, I mean, this team, this coach, absolutely flaunted. Also flaunted, ABBA. ABBA flaunted for just the resurgence in relevance. The resurgence in relevance they've had to have seen in the wake of Fernando Mania. I think I saw somewhere that it was like ABBA's most streamed, like this in the wake of Fernando's run, ABBA was like more streamed than it had been in the entire history of Spotify. So I mean, it's not just Hoosiers getting paid off that run. ABBA getting paid as well. ABBA flaunted, absolute bangers. Flaunted Lamar Wilkerson, 41 points against Oregon. 25 points when he can't hit a shot from deep against Wisconsin. Lamar Wilkerson is a total bucket. He can do it in multiple ways and just absolutely flaunted for us this last week. Sam Alexis flaunted his performance against both teams, really. I mean, I think it was 9-for-10 in the first game against Wisconsin, a perfect 8-for-8 against Oregon. Sam Alexis finding ways to overcome his the height deficit he has at times with just stellar play, high energy, and just finding a way to get it done for a front court that needed this to happen. Flaunted Connor Enright, reading the game, feeling the game, being a total point guard when we need him to most, finding ways to get into the head of Nick Boyd. You know Nick Boyd was losing his mind throughout that game with Connor's ability to just get under these guys' skin. And that results in what we saw. That results in boneheaded moves like putting your arm up when the only thing you can't do is charge there. Connor was able to get it out of him. Connor Enright absolutely flaunted with just the way he's been able to protect the ball and affect the bottom line of Indiana winning. Also flaunted the feeling. The feeling's being restored. This program, man, it's fun to watch. It's fun to be back here in the middle of February. The feeling is slowly but surely being restored. And Indiana basketball will be back in full force. I'm feeling it. Hashtag the feeling. Yes. Absolutely flaunted. Starting off the daunted for the week, Charles Bediako, Alabama's G League center, has been ruled ineligible. Sorry, man. Sorry about your luck, but also shame for even trying this shit. Dude has signed three NBA contracts. And thought it was time to come back to college basketball. Get out of here. Also daunted, Jeremy Fears is putting up absolutely outrageous numbers. He is a stellar player, but he's making that the B story for his season as he is just making boneheaded moves and cheap-shotting the hell out of people. Jeremy Fears daunted. Also daunted, Dana Altman. His defeat at IU marks the 10th straight for him on the season, and this is a record for his 37-year-long coaching career. Dana Altman, I think I had Oregon on the last one. I saw this coming with this Oregon team this year, I swear. Maybe it was easier to see than I'm giving myself credit for, but it's gotten bad. It's bad. And Dana Altman absolutely daunted, letting the protege win that one. No shame in losing to Indiana, but, man, it's kind of shame in losing in the fashion you did. Daunted Nick Boyd. This dude loves picking fights with home crowds. You saw it in, if you watched any of the Illinois-Wisconsin game that followed ours, he was doing the same shit, man. He loves picking fights with home crowds. And, you know, shit's sweet. Shit's sweet as long as you don't charge into the opposition in, like, full time and overtime and cost your team the game. As long as you, like, you can get all rah-rah rowdy in the opposing fan base's face, but it might just turn around and bite you in the tail like it did for him against us. Lastly, on the daunted list for the week, I think it's a record 16th appearance, Purdue football. Man, it's been ages since they last won a football game in the Big Ten Conference. And, I guess they have the fourth best transfer portal class in the Big Ten. We have the first, of course. I mean, we have the first in the nation, according to the same chart. They didn't put that on their graphic. But, man, that was a terrible graphic they put out to announce, to pat their own back on how well they've been doing in the portal. Terrible graphic. Purdue football will stay daunted. And let's get on to Burke's Big Five. For this week's Burke's Big Five, I wanted to do five Hoosiers. You should bet Iacco on to next year's roster. Of course, this is entirely a joke, as I don't agree with Betty Iaccoing anybody on your roster. And yes, I'm using Betty Iacco as the verb for taking somebody who has signed NBA contracts and putting them on your squad in college. Because, like, just saying that is just too outrageous. So I'm going to use the verb Betty Iacco, to Betty Iacco a player, to bring him from professional down back to college. These are the five players that I think we should bet Iacco. Yeah, Khalil Ware and OG Anunoby would be tight, you know, but it seems like they're really busy cashing checks in the NBA right now. So, like, I'm not picking dudes that crazy. Okay. Some of these, there's some reasoning behind all of this. And most of them are, they're like players from some of my favorite teams. So, first off, I'd start with, Troy Williams. Troy Williams, age 31, still has some eligibility left to give us. Currently playing in Sonora, Mexico. We could get him back. We could absolutely pay the bill to get Troy Williams another year of college basketball. Second on my list, Jalen Hood-Schifino. I mean, you got to hope that he still has something to offer the NBA. I'm sure he does. If he can find an opportunity, if he has a chance, whatever the state of the injury is, I think last I saw, he's doing well in finding himself and just finding what he wants to do in life. That being said, I wouldn't mind him on this squad for a few more years with the amount of eligibility he would have left if we were to go back and Betty Iacco him onto this squad. Jalen Hood-Schifino. Third up is Noah Vonleh, currently playing in St. Petersburg, Russia. He's probably 30 now, so he still had years to give us. He has eligibility. Noah Vonleh, let's bring him in. Let's get him some run. Let's see what he's still got left in the tank if we were to Betty Iacco him onto next year's squad. Fourth, Thomas Bryant. Thomas Bryant has got to be 31. Now, you know, I threw out the Khalil Ware and OG Anunoby before, but Thomas Bryant, he has signed his last contract was, he signed a 1-year, $3.29 million contract with the Cavaliers. I feel like we could muster up $4 million for next season. We can outbid the NBA for Thomas Bryant. We can pay more than they're willing to pay him to get him on the Indiana Hoosiers, to Betty Iacco him onto next year's squad. And lastly, my number one pick with a bullet, Oladipo. He's got to be 34 years old by now. But for the Milwaukee Herd, he's averaging 14.7 points on 27.3 minutes in 11 games played. My favorite Indiana Hoosier player probably ever, Yogi, both those guys. But Victor Oladipo, he's got another year of eligibility that we could absolutely use. He could impart some wisdom onto a young squad. And, yeah, that would be my number one player to bet Iacho onto the squad. Yes, that segment's dumb, okay? But it's just a fun, you know, just a fun little bit for you. On to the preview of the Illinois matchup to come. Sunday afternoon, 1 p.m., Indiana will be heading to Champaign to take on the Fighting Illini. Illinois currently sits at number 4 in KenPom with the number 1 offensive rating and the number 22 defense. Over the course of their last 5 games, they've lost 2. Oh, no, no. They beat Washington 75-66, beat Nebraska at Nebraska 78-69, beat Illinois or beat Northwestern at home 84-44 in an impressive rout. Lost to Michigan State 85-82, and in their most recent game, lost to Wisconsin 92-90. Both of those losses coming in overtime, both of them having to hurt the soul going the full 45. Currently, Keaton Wagler, he leads the team with 18.5 points. He has sprung onto the scene and is absolutely the leader of this team's production right now. Illinois is opening this game as 12-point favorites over the Hoosiers with the ESPN matchup predictor, whatever that means for you. With Illinois with an 80.1% chance of winning the game and IU with a 19.9. Illinois is coming off that 2-game losing skid. And here's hoping the Hoosiers can pile on much like they did with the Purdue skid and kick that opponent's bounce back down the road to the next jump in line once again. These two games in which they've played two or more physical teams, two of the more physical teams there are in the conference in Michigan State and Wisconsin. With Illinois coming off that game with Wisconsin prior to playing us, a game in which they were looking to get right once again after their 12-game winning streak was snapped by Michigan State at the Breslin Center, 85-82 in overtime. They're going to be out for blood. They're going to want their bounce back. We just need to do everything in our power to try to just go into Champaign and steal one. Wisconsin was able to win the offensive rebound battle, which to my surprise, honestly, remember, I said we tied Wisconsin with our rebounds 37-37. Wisconsin was extremely effective against the much taller, the much more imposing Illinois just size. And despite Illinois towering over them, it was all on the back of Wisconsin coming out of the gate, looking to fight for each and every opportunity, looking to maximize every opportunity they were given. In this game, it may be the return of Kylan Boswell. He has been injured for a while with a hand injury, but we may very well see him make his return on Sunday. Since he's gone down, the Illinois team seems to have gone with their just has gone where their outstanding freshman Keaton Wagler has taken them. Keaton Wagler, he's absolutely been taking the conference by storm with just some of the performances, but he's not unstoppable. He just like so many, like they aren't immune to their own off days. Just it's a freshman. It happens to freshmen. Off days happen. In the Michigan State game, the Spartans were able to hold him to 2-for-16 from the floor. He's a freshman. That'll happen to a freshman. A stellar freshman, but still a freshman. In the Wisconsin game, Keaton and Wagler was able to have 34 points on 12-for-23 from the floor. He was able to rack up 7 assists, but on top of that, he did have 5 turnovers, keeping the Wisconsin Badgers in the game. Not all on him. Like he was having a heroic effort out there. His shot-making ability is pretty damn impressive if you're watching him in-game. his game over the course of the Wisconsin game, like as it got into the second half, as it got down into overtime, it started looking a lot like a Kasperis Jakusionis game down the line, just in that as the team got more and more tired, they lost a lot of their original game plan, a lot of the free-flowing offense that they were showing in the first, and it looked to be Keaton's show. And just a bunch of support staff taking up the floor with him. Andre Stojakovic was out against Wisconsin with an ankle injury, and he was seen in practice just this last practice, apparently, according to the latest reporting out there. But, boy, like I would really appreciate if he would like to take a little more time just to rest up. He offers an outlet for the likes of Keaton Wagler, and I mean, if Kylan Boswell's back, that it's just such a reliable option on that offensive end and honestly defensive experience. Would not mind if he was unavailable for this one. Illinois, they're absolutely one of the best rebounding teams in the country. And with our team as it's currently built, losing that battle and giving up a few second-chance buckets is almost a preconceived notion at this point. It's just a preconceived inevitability, really. But what the Hoosiers can do to limit the damage that will be done on the boards, like they're going to have to bring just an unmatched energy into this game in the fake assembly hall. They'll have to just bring a Herculean effort to try to keep up with the board grabbing abilities that the Fighting Illini have shown that they have. And if we can keep it close, if we can keep it, I mean, exactly on par like we did against Wisconsin, I like our chances more than a lot of people do out there. It's going to be a tough one. Conference games are tough to win at home. They are so much more tough to win on the road. They are so much more tough to win against top 10 teams in the country on the road. So it's going to be a fun one. I always love this matchup. It's a great watch. Indiana taking on the Fighting Illini Sunday at 1:00. That is on CBS. Set your alarms and go Hoosiers. Let's get the dub. Let's get you on a Hoosier history hit, and then we'll get you on out of here. For your Hoosier history hit, this was inspired by just seeing IU take to the black uniforms more and more often. There is some historical background to support Indiana wearing those uniforms, actually. They look a bit cleaner every time I see the team in them, and there is some history here to support our wearing of them. So Indiana school colors in the earliest years of the university were crimson and black. The change to cream and crimson was made and solidified by the class of 1888. Prior to 1888, there was the school colors, which were black and crimson. And on top of that, traditionally, once you were a senior, you were to adopt like senior specific colors, which were, in the case of the 1887 seniors, were cream and gold. So like your school colors were crimson and black until you became a senior, and then your school color was cream and gold. Apparently you had just had to set yourself apart for some reason like that. The class of 1888 said, nah, none of this nonsense. We are one squad, and changed it to the cream and crimson that we see today. That was just going to be the whole student body's color at that point. And honestly, I think a large reason for this was the growing athletics teams. As Indiana football was in its second season in 1888, that was a season that consisted of a total of one single game against DePaul University that ended in a 6-6 tie. Yes, Indiana went 0-0-1 for the entirety of the 1888 football season a far better finish than their inaugural season, in which they went 0-1 with a loss, with a 8-10 loss at the hands of Franklin College in that that their only game played on the season. Prior to, yeah. So, yeah, credit to the class of 1888 saying, you know what, we aren't better than y'all. We are y'all. Let's go cream and crimson. So there's just a little insight on why it's okay for us to wear black from time to time. Those uniforms have grown on me immensely. And you know what? Yeah, winning in them would do that, right? So as I see more wins in the black uniforms, I'm going to like this Hoosier team wearing black from time to time. Yeah, that was your Hoosier history hit, a short one for you this week. Thank you so much for tuning into the Often Daunted podcast. Thank you for giving me a chance. If this is your first episode and you liked it, please feel free to subscribe to the YouTube channel. Feel free to subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to this on your audio platforms. If you do want to give me a follow, follow me on X and Instagram at Often Daunted. You can find me there. Any updates on the show, I'll post there. If you want to, I follow back so that you guys are able to interact with me better. I just feel like if you have anything, any suggestions for the show that I can use to make it better, my favorite producers are my listeners, are you guys. So feel free to reach out with anything, any thoughts you may have on the content of the show, on or just if you have a question for me, at Often Daunted across all platforms. I will be back next week, most likely Tuesday for you, to recap our game with Illinois and to preview the Purdue matchup to keep Braden Smith under 500 against the Candy Stripes in what was once viewed as the most promising window of opportunity in Little Bros history. So trying to get this one. I will have that one out next week. Please come back and let's talk some more ball. Thank you so much. God bless you and yours, Hoosier fans. Lux et Veritas. Bye.